did what I did for the good of the realm. The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agreed to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Many who try to climb it fail, but never get to try again. Fall breaks them. And some are given a chance to climb, but they refuse. They cling to the realm, or the gods, or love. Illusions. Only the ladder is real. The climb is all there is.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network with your host, Tom Metzger.
Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, come on down. You're the host of the Insurgent Radio Network, broadcasting live from the bunker in North Central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to eat, but mostly drink. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase a freshly refurbished weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar, if the price is right. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, the insurgent, just plain old box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
Well, Judicial Watch found another 296 pages of State Department records. Yeah, Hillary's records, of which 44 email exchanges were not previously turned over to the State Department, bringing the known total to date to 171 of new Clinton emails, not part of the last bunch. How about that? Oh, this comes from Shewa. Oh, she wouldn't do that file, man. She wouldn't do that. A central scam of the new Tammany Hall system would not be unfamiliar to old Tammany Hall. An incisive new expose published today in Judicial Watch's investigative bulletin charges that New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, real estate developer Bruce Ratner, and Democrat presidential nominee Hillary are key players in a new Tammany Hall that manipulates billions of dollars of public funds into vast private profits. The report was written by Judicial Watch's chief investigative reporter Micah Morrison. The report provides a roadmap to how New York City's controversial Atlantic Yards development project became what Morrison terms a giant boondoggle, generating torrents of cash for well-connected insiders. Among the highlights of Morrison's piece, real estate developer and Democratic Party heavyweight Bruce Ratner is a central figure in the battles over Atlantic Yards, smart, tough, tireless, Ratner has courted controversy with unfulfilled promises of public benefits, multimillion dollar payoffs, paydays, and links to crooked politicians and their enablers. I can't believe it. Corruption? I thought they all believed in the baby Jesus. Ratner has close ties to de Blasio and Clinton. Clinton's presidential campaign headquarters is in a Ratner building in Brooklyn. Yeah, it's in Brooklyn because Bill wants to stay close to the black whores down there in that part of town. One lucrative lever of the new Tammany system is called the Public Authorities Control Board. According to court testimony, it has no staff, no offices, and has approved billions of dollars of bond sales, unquote. In a 2006 meeting that lasted just five minutes, the PACB approved Ratner's Atlantic Yards proposal. Despite mounting opposition to the project, the price tag is $4 billion. A PACB approval opened the door for Ratner to receive taxpayer-backed benefits and financing. The benefits included an immediate cash injection of $100 million for the new infrastructure, such as streets and sewers. According to testimony by a state budget official in a lawsuit, and later $511 million sale of tax-free bonds. No wonder they're all living up there in the Hamptons and you're living in the back of your car. Ratner received state backing, financing, and $726 million in special government benefits. Now, what? How in the hell could he ever spend $726 million just living? I can't understand how anybody can do that. Your tax dollars at work to help finance the Barclays Center portion of the site, according to analysis by the city's independent budget office. The benefits include direct contributions of cash, capital investment, and property. Access to tax-exempt financing, exemption from property, sales, and mortgage taxes, and below-market sale of Metropolitan Transportation Authority land, the IBO report said. Despite all that, Barclays looked like a loser for the city. The arena would cost the city nearly $40 million more in spending than it would generate in tax revenues, the report said. Wow. In 2014, Ratner sold an ownership stake in Atlantic Yards, excluding the Barclays site, for $208 million. The buyer, Shanghai-based Greenland Holdings, a company controlled by Chinese government. In a move of Orwellian audacity, Ratner and his new chinky boy partners promptly changed the name of the site from Atlantic Yards to Pacific Park. Greenland now reaps the benefit of the subsidies, tax breaks, and cheap land that Forest City Ratner wangled for the project in the 2000s, wrote Norman Oder, a Brooklyn journalist who chronicles the project on a watchdog blog called Atlantic Yards / Pacific Park Report. If you want to keep following this, there's quite a bit more to this report, but I'm not going to do the whole thing. Just another example of the thorough, absolute, bottomless corruption that your tax money supports. I'm sorry, boys. It don't do no good to write them letters. Don't do no good to demonstrate and hand out leaflets. You got to do it like the French did it. Yeah, do it like the French did it. The bottom of this article, it says, quote, "That's why Judicial Watch is demanding records from the mayor's office for the timely production of materials related to this controversy," We will take it to court if necessary because the public has a right to know. Well, so what if they know, if they can't do anything about, if they don't do anything about it, if heads don't roll, if people don't go to prison, if somebody doesn't pay the price, what the hell good? The public just has a right to know. Well, there's a new book about to come out, and it's about the massive voter fraud danger in the current presidential election. Why, hell, they wouldn't do that. This is especially important because of the lack of interest of the Obama Justice Department. What Justice Department? In investigating and prosecuting voter fraud from attached pre-release chapter of Clean House. Wow. A soon-to-be-released book by the New York Times, I don't know about that, best-selling author Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton warns that America may now be facing the greatest voter fraud danger in recent history. And it lays the blame of the crisis directly at the feet of President Negro Barack Obama and his Just Us Department. The book called Clean House, to be released on August 30th from Simon & Schuster, cites examples nationwide of attempts by the Obama Justice Department to thwart efforts to clean up voting rolls, require voter ID at the polls, and prevent voter intimidation. In a chapter titled Voter Fraud, Stealing Elections, The Danger of Voter Fraud and the Fight for Election Integrity. Well, the whole concept of the election is ridiculous. The whole concept from year one. It's always there to be manipulated. Fitton describes major legal battles to protect voter integrity. Voter integrity in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, Tennessee, and North Carolina, Maryland, and Indiana. We got voter problem here in Indiana. You mean they're putting them? They're putting those unqualified people on there on voting rolls here in Indiana. They wouldn't do that. This Indiana's motherhood and apple pie, and we love the baby Jesus state. And our governor now is going to be try to be vice president. He wouldn't do something like that. In Indiana, Obama Holder Justice Department opposed federally mandated efforts to clean up the voter list, despite publicly available information showing that the number of people listed on voter registration rolls in 12 Indiana counties exceeds 100% of the total number of residents of voting age in these counties. That's on page 129 of the book. You want to bet where those counties are? it's not even a question. It's not even a question. They're up there in the Northeast where all those Niggers are at. Those Chicago Niggers and those black KKK people. And around Indianapolis, Indiana, the capital. Of course, you know, the blacks always gather around the main headquarters like they do Washington, D.C. So if you want to look for voter fraud, that would be a good start. But all the progressive radio shows are whining, oh, no, this is terrible. You're denying people the right to vote. You're just mean and nasty. You're trying to deny these poor people the right to vote. It's terrible. Now, in Florida, the Justice Department filed a lawsuit in 2012 to stop the state's efforts to comply with the National Voting Rights Act by removing 53,000 registered voters who were dead, as well as an additional 2,700 non-citizens. Wow. Oh, man, 53,000 corpses deciding who's going to be your leaders. Well, that's probably as good as anything. And in Pennsylvania, when the new Black Panther Party stood in the doorway of a polling place, clad in black paramilitary uniforms, brandishing a nightstick and arguing with passerbys and shouting racial insults at poll watchers. The case was abruptly curtailed and all but shut down by the newly appointed officials of the Obama administration. According to Clean House, America's voter fraud crisis is both widespread and widely recognized. And the progressives deny it all the way to the bank. The book cites a recent Pew Research Center study revealing that approximately 2.75 million people have active voter registrations in more than one state, and 20 million, one in every eight, active registrations in the United States are no longer valid or are significantly inaccurate. And it cites a Rasmussen's poll of August 2013 reporting that only 39% of Americans believe elections are fair. Well, I don't think 39% think they're even honest. They're crooked. They always have been. These people sort of tickle me. We once had honest elections. Yeah, right. I love it. I love it when progressives and a lot of these other people get caught in their own mess. Because it always comes around to that. It always does. Now they're caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. Here's a little thing that somebody wrote up that I think you'll understand. There are several reasons why traditional religious perspectives are increasingly losing out to legal challenges mounted under the rubric of anti-discrimination. The first is the gradual transformation of the primary rationale for anti-discrimination laws. These started as a part of an effort to redress the exclusion of Negro Americans and others from the mainstream of American life. Let us in. We demand to get in, men. We can't make it on our own. Because of that relatively defined goal, the framers of early civil rights wrongs legislation, as Samuelson notes, were content to provide exemptions from its stringencies for minor economic players such as landlords who were living on their own property. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Over time, however, the Americans gravitated, let's say white people that did have the power, gravitated to the notion that discrimination per se is immoral and harmful and must be forcibly suppressed, even if the economic consequences are minimal or non-existent. We have reached a point where if even one out of hundreds of local wedding photographers declines for religious reasons to photograph a same-sex wedding, the lone photographer is seen by many to have committed a grave offense deserving of punishment, maybe even jail time. Another factor favoring anti-discrimination laws over religious liberty is that the left, which traditionally fought for both religious liberty and non-discrimination, has made a virtual religion out of the latter while largely abandoning the traditional religion. The left also once enjoyed a substantial religious base. Today it has become dominated by secularists, who simply fail to understand the perspective of religious traditionalists. Just a minute here. Okay, where am I at? Here I am. Many secularists see adherence to longstanding moral teachings as compelling evidence of irrational animus. Secular liberals seem unable to discern why, unless out of a prejudiced hostility to women's rights, a Catholic university should decline to provide its employees with insurance coverage for birth control. This failure of moral imagination is quite staggering, especially given that progressives consider themselves to be exceptionally open-minded and tolerant of diversity. Ha ha ha! That's funny. try to write a letter to the local paper or something like that, that they don't lie. Or get on a radio. Try to get on a radio show and express your views. Still another related factor in the rout of religious liberty is the unwillingness of the American Civil Liberties Union and other one-time supporters of the free exercise of religion to defend the rights of traditionalist Christians, lest by doing so they fall on the wrong side of the culture wars. It was one thing for the ACLU and like-minded groups to have historically defended politically inconsequential minorities like coyote-smoking Indians and Sabbatarians, as well as Orthodox Jews, whose free exercise rights were threatened by the mainstream Protestant majority. It's quite another thing today to defend the evangelical Christians when they object to aspects of the modern anti-discrimination law. Over the last 30 years, the ACLU has gone from being a relatively small organization whose membership was composed largely of committed civil libertarians to a mass membership organization with big budgets, dependent on goodwill of political liberals who in turn think of evangelical Christians as their political and cultural enemies. This has caused the ACLU to give short shrift to its once proud tradition of defending free exercise of religion, a shift exemplified by the organization's changing position on Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That 1993 act, which, as Samuelson points out, was passed almost unanimously by Congress, responding to a Supreme Court opinion written by none other than the late Justice Antonin Scalia. Scalia had taken the firm position traditionally associated with conservatives that free exercise rights do not include the right to disobey general laws that do not themselves target religion. Anti-discrimination laws sure do. Among those persuading Congress to pass the RFRA was the ACLU. Well, on and on and on. What I'm reading this to you for is so you understand it goes round and round. They start out and they think they've got it all figured out, and it comes back to bite them in the ass. So now you're going to see the traditionalist Christians and groups like that fighting their ass off against the secular people, anti-discrimination people. So that's good. The more we can cause them to fight each other, the better off we are. Yeah. Well, even though Bill Clinton took 16 trips to the Caribbean without his Secret Service agents with him, by himself and that Jew pedophile he runs around with, to this little pedophile island that they go to molest little kids. Even though that's well known, this has gone on, and the Democrat Party's full of them. But how about the GOP? Power player accused of child molester. He was a huge Georgia Republican power player, and the whole time he was allegedly molesting children, dozens of them. It took 5 decades to get him behind bars. There are potentially dozens of victims, children as young as 4 years old, spanning at least 3 states over 5 decades. In at least one incident, the predator and sometimes Sunday school teacher... They'll do it every time. Well, of course they want to be Sunday school teachers, to be close to the little kiddies. Threatened to kill a child's family if they told anyone what had happened to them. And he almost got away with it. Georgia authorities say Joseph Russell Dindy, a political player with connections from Main Street to Capitol Hill Street, lured children into his suburban Atlanta home and molested them. Yeah. He almost got away with it. Georgia authorities said Joseph Russell Dindy, a political player with He's 71 years old, clad in an orange jail jumpsuit, shuffled into Cobb County Courthouse to face indictments on multiple counts of molestation, first-degree cruelty to children and enticing children for indecent purposes, and aggravated sexual battery. Now, I haven't heard the Republican Party talking about this one. Have you? Shit. In Georgia, aggravated sexual battery is the intentional penetration or a sexual organ with a foreign object. Prosecutors say it wasn't the first time, and if Dendy is like most predators, he chose victims he thought would be afraid to say anything. If convicted, Dendy could spend the rest of his natural life in prison. Well, he should. I think the death penalty would be better. Good riddance. With the outstanding warrants, arrest warrants in South Carolina and Michigan, the day after his arrest Thursday, the married grandfather was also booked on fugitive charges. The former Army captain, Vietnam veteran, and Clemson University alumni was indicted by a grand jury and is being held without bond in Cobb County Jail. Dendy's prominence in political circles is almost as stunning as the fact that it took 55 years of his vile acts to catch up with him. The local district attorney believes Dendy molested a boy in the 50s when the alleged pedophile was just 16. Several victims said they were embarrassed or too scared to come forward. This is not a bond case, Judge Adele Grubb said from the bench. He doesn't have to wave a gun to intimidate. Dendy, who operated a travel business with his wife Billy since the early 1990s, once rubbed elbows with such Georgia's most powerful state local lawmakers. He was well known in Republican circles. They loved him, and until last year he was a two-term chairman of the Cobb County Republican Party. One of the largest and most politically potent such organizations in the state of Georgia. Dendy was a campaign manager for former state representatives Roger Hines and Sam Teasley. Yeah, I'll bet he was on the front row of cussing out everybody that's a white racist, too. I bet he was on the front row of getting rid of the Confederate flag and all that stuff, you know. Hines, a former school teacher, was one of the few who spoke up publicly for Dendy at a recent bond hearing. He cited Dendy's impeccable character. He's such a great guy. It should also be noted that Dendy raised $100,000 for Governor Nathan Deal's general election campaign and was also Georgia's state director for former Arkansas Governor Turner, Fox News pundit like Mike Huckabee's presidential bid. That figures. Huckabee's probably won too. According to Georgia conservative lawyer and blogger Jason Shepard. Well, there you go. There's more to that, but there are thousands of these guys running around, these pedophiles, including Bill Clinton. They're all over the place. If you've got that program in your state where you can bring it up on your computer, you probably got one just next door to you. Yeah. And these, many times, they're upstanding citizens in the community. On the front row of anti-racist type programs and saying, oh, that Metzger out there, he's a racist, he's a white racist, he likes white people. That's bullshit. I only like little kids. So there you go. It's not just Democrats. It's Republicans, too, all over the place. And Republicans get away with it longer than the Democrats, I think. Because they can play goody-two-shoes and teach Sunday school and all that shit better than any Democrat. Well, I was noticing on the internet with the Black Lives Matter, an article here with some guy that's the new guy on the boardwalk with the new Black Panther Party. And I see some things here that are quite interesting. Okay, this is the interviewer. I want to talk about something you wrote on Facebook. You said, I quote, I'm the most hated nigger in white America right now. What do you mean by these words? So Babu Omowale, who is the big shot in the new Black Panther Party, I guess, he says, well, because I'm talking about migrating away from the white man, and because I'm part of a militia that fights against the system of white supremacy. I'm talking about migrating away from the white man. Well, that's, hey, you got a supporter there. They don't mind me fighting against the system of white supremacy. But when you start talking about building your own nation within a nation, having your own black economic system, your own black education system, this is what scares white people here in this country. Well, it don't scare me. I love it. That's great. I'm all for you. When the black man starts talking about cutting him off and having his own, I think that's what makes me the most hated nigger in America, as I quoted. If you go to some white blogs, they basically say just that, that I'm the one they have to look out for. Of course, I don't see myself in their light as the one because, again, like I said, there is no black messiah. There's no one individual. We're going to have to do this as a collective. When I say the most hated nigger in America, I'm just the point person right now that the white person can go on social media and visually see that's leading our people to rebel against his oppressive system. Well, so far I don't see a problem. So the reporter asks, so do you feel hunted by the government or by the police? Babu says, maybe not by the government, maybe not by the police, but by white supremacist organizations here in this country, most definitely. I wonder who those organizations are and why they're chasing you around. If you want a separate nation, buddy, be my guest. I'm not going to follow you around, chase you, or take a shot at you or anything. I don't know who the hell these people are that are white that would do that. Because that's exactly what we want, is separation. They got the eye out for me. I'm sure they would like to run across me somewhere, but with my beliefs, I'm not afraid. I understand what it is that I'm doing and what I'm taking places, so there's no fear. When I go to my messenger on Facebook, I've got hundreds of death threats. They don't bother me, and the reason is I'm a militant as well. So for them to kill me, that means they're going to have to come to me, and it's going to be a battle between what I call good and evil, and I'm the good. I'm not just going to lay my life down without a fight. It's time to wake up our people and try to advance them. If we was talking about some minor stuff, we wouldn't have a problem. Let me go back to Martin Luther King. Well, I hope you realize he was a phony from the word go. Black people were led down the primrose path by the Right Reverend Martin Luther King. As long as he was talking about civil rights, he wasn't a problem. But as soon as he started talking about the government against the war in Vietnam, that's when Martin Luther King was assassinated. Well, of course, I know that, you know that, what's new? As long as he was just sticking to the black folk problem, the government and the people didn't have a problem with him, but when he started to nationalize the problem, that was when they said, well, we got to put the brakes on this Negro. But he wasn't pushing separation, says Tommy. Martin Luther King was pushing integration, race mixing. Bad, bad. So the reporter asked him again, now what about the group that's considered by most to be a terrorist group? Are you being wanted by anybody, by the government or institutions, due to this classification? Babu says, well, I don't know. I don't see how they consider us as a terrorist group, but we cannot link one terrorist act to our organization. We're just a terrorist group by name. That's it. Who named us a terrorist group? The Southern Poverty Law Center? A white Jewish group that keeps up with people who they consider terrorists? We've never done anything to them. Well, you caught on to Morris D's scam too, buddy. We're trying to wake up our own people. We're not worried about white people and white supremacists. There are thousands of white supremacist groups like ours in the United States. They're actually killing people, and they're not labeled as white supremacists or terrorists. I don't know where all these groups of white supremacists that are killing people are at. I wish somebody would tell me. There are only maybe a few thousand black gun clubs and black organizations that do what we do. And if you go to the SPLC, that's Morris D's gang, all of them are listed as terrorists. I wonder why that is when we have not committed a terrorist act. They cannot even link us to one terrorist act. Well, join the club. Join the club, Babu. Next question. That really shows the bias in the American society right now. Well, it's, of course it's bias. The ruling class, they run the show. What's the problem? The rules are quite different for black people and white people. And I think that's very obvious here. Well, there's not as much difference as you would think when it comes to the white working class. Babu says, yes, it is, and I'll give you another example. We have here in the state of Texas an open carry law, which means you can legally carry a firearm when you're walking down the street, as long as you're not doing it in a threatening manner. White people do this all the time. They have big parades and functions, and they go up and they shake the police hands. They're all friendly, but when black people do it, when my organization does it, the police are not friendly with us. They send a SWAT team out to monitor us from the time we leave until the time we finish. They harass us during the protests. So the law clearly is not the same when it comes to the Second Amendment and open carry of firearms. When we open carry as African American women, men and women, we're constantly harassed. When white people do it, they get an escort by the police. Well, it could have a little bit to do with all of this black crime. I mean, come on, Babu, give me a break. But you should be able to walk down the street, according to the rules of the road, carrying a gun. The interviewer says, do you think that all black Americans should be able to defend themselves with guns? Babu says, I do. I just believe that the first law of nature, not only for black people, but for any human being, the first law of nature is self-preservation. With our people, we tend to die easier, meaning that we don't put up any type of fight against somebody taking our life. We're not saying that we should go out and kill police officers and things of that nature, but we're saying that when a police officer is clearly breaking the law, if he clearly has crossed the line, that you have a right to defend yourself and preserve your life. Of course you do. That's the information we're trying to get to the people. Again, we're not telling people to attack police officers, but what we are saying is that you have a human right to defend yourself, defend your life, and to preserve your life and the life of your family. If someone is trying to kill you, then you're not going to have a second guess on whether you're going to stay alive or not. Defend yourself and keep yourself and your family alive. Well, I don't see any problem with this so far. Next question. Why do you think there's so many black people who are ready to defend themselves with weapons in their hands? Well, Babu says, yes, since the conception of our gun club on August 20th, 2014, and just as we started putting up information basically on social media, the government has reported that there's been over a 50% increase in black people buying firearms. And we directly attribute this to the education process of the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, connecting with other organizations throughout the country to promote black gun ownership. I wouldn't want to use Huey Newton as my hero. Huey Newton was sort of a putz. He was sort of a, yeah, the Nazis in Oakland almost ran him out of town. He's a guy that pistol whipped his tailor because he was measuring him for a new suit, and he had got his hands down around his crotch, and Huey thought he was going after him, so Huey pistol whipped him. Yeah, he did that. Another question. They say that Black Lives Matter movement is a peaceful organization while your organization is a dangerous armed group. What do you have to say about this opinion? Well, the Black Lives Matter organization, they are peaceful. They pray. They hold hands. But you have people in the Black Lives Matter movement that are just as dangerous as anybody else, because Black Lives Matter is not an organization. It's a movement, and there's a difference in an organization. You know who your members are. You pay dues to that organization. This is a movement dissimilar to the civil rights movement, so there can be no individual people that could say, quote, I'm Black Lives Matter, and I'm not Black Lives Matter. With my organization, we are dangerous, and we are armed, but only when people confront us. Well, I can respect that. The people that I deal with, we believe in protecting ourselves, and we believe in self-preservation, so if you're not righteous and you come and try to harm one of us, we're going to fight back. But if dangerous, we're going to attack a government building and hold hostages? We're nothing like that. We're the kind of organization that if you bring harm to us, we will fight back. And we do train. We do paramilitary training. We arm ourselves with the best ammunition. And that's because our counterparts have the same thing. White people make guns. We have to buy guns. But we have the same self-defense perspective as any other ethnic group on this planet. We want to preserve our people. We don't want people just to come in and murder our people and not be accountable. This is a type of activity that gave birth to organizations like mine. When we collide, as we do, protests, we're not protesting because it's a social event. We're not drinking there and having fun at a party. We're out protesting because one of our people has been murdered by the system, by the establishment, by the police. Alton Sterling of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, shot in the heart. Philando Castillo, who was a legal gun owner, who had his license, was murdered in a car in front of his 4-year-old daughter. That's not true. Philando did not have a permit for the gun, and the gun was in his lap, and he reached for it. So you got to get these things straight, or you'd lose credibility. These are the issues that we're protesting. We're protesting murders by the oppressive system and what we now deem as the race soldiers of the United States, the police department. I don't think I would refer to them as that in my experience. Next question. Well, so being a dangerous armed group, of course, you explained very well, and I do understand, but don't you think that the example of Malcolm X and other historical examples show that maybe the way of violence could be a losing way as the government and those in power can cause your ideas against you, can use your ideas against you, and they can try to physically eliminate people in the whole group? Well, I say, yeah, they do. Malcolm X. Malcolm X did more for blacks than Martin Luther King ever did. When they started burning down cities from the West Coast to the East Coast, they got their attention. The ruling class said, hey, what do you want? We're going to give you some stuff, boy. Just leave us alone. Babu, yeah, they can. They can eliminate the whole group, and what's going to happen is another group is going to take shape. It's not the group, it's the conditions that make the group. Unless those conditions change, the people are not going to change. People are going to always fight against oppression and against tyranny. Again, it goes back to the thought process of, I'm a man, and if I'm a man, I'm not going to continue to let you kick me in the mouth. I'm not going to continue to let you murder my children and my wife. At some point, a man has to stand up and say, to hell with that, I'm going to give my life for the betterment of my people. So they can kill all of us, they can put all of us in jail, just like they did the original Black Panther Party. But you see that the movement has not stopped. From the original Black Panther Party, you have the New Black Panther Party. From the New Black Panther Party, you have the Huey Newton P. Newton Gun Club, and so many more black power organizations are popping up around the country. The movement is not going to stop just because you take one group out. Let's see, well, how much more of this interview is there? It goes on for quite a while. But anyhow, you get the point. I see nothing wrong as long as they stress separation. If blacks want to stress separation and self-defense, that's fine with me. And if they decide the ruling class is too much and they attack the ruling class, I don't think I'm going to do anything about it, even if I could do something about it, because I have no sympathy for the ruling class. And I know the crimes they use against everybody, not just black people. Use it against our people, too. So Babu's out there, boys and girls. He ain't going to take any shit. Yeah. He's not going to get any trouble from me as long as he don't start wiping out white working class neighborhoods and so forth. As long as he wants separation and is working on separation, we have no problem at all. Better giving Brother Donald Trump trouble in Jacksonville, Florida. A concerned citizen called First Coast News to report several pro-Donald Trump signs in the Arlington area of Jacksonville vandalized Tuesday with the KKK, a reference to a white supremacist group. The signs were damaged on the 200 block of Caesarea Boulevard. KKK was spray-painted in red over the sign. Well, they show a sign here. It looks okay to me. I know most of the KKK support Donald Trump. So what's the problem? So they got KKK in big letters over the top of Trump. You can read them both. The KKK will probably be happy about that, man. A police car reportedly arrived as a citizen was driving away. We have reached out to the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office for more information. We're waiting to hear back. Big deal, baby. I just wish Trump was even close to being as racist as the Klan. Here's something, a real new revelation. The KKK is putting out flyers that say, quote, Jews control money in America, unquote. Big surprise there, man. They've been writing about this for 100 years. These flyers distributed by the Ku Klux Klan said that the Jews control money in America. Why, shame on them. These flyers distributed by the Ku Klux Klan said that Jews did bad things. Boy, I'll tell you, they're really getting behind these KKK guys. I think they're about 50 years behind time. They're giving this newspaper up in Longview, Washington, a hard time because evidently they put a map of the country, duplicate, I guess, of the SPLC map that shows where all the Ku Klux Klan groups are in the country, which makes it that easy, much easier for you to go there and find out where they're at and join up. So these people are saying, that's a bad thing, putting that map on there. You're just going to get more Ku Kluxers running around. Stop it. Well, they just took a poll, and a majority of young blacks, mestizos, fear violence by white extremists. Well, it's better. It's just as good to be feared as loved. 62% of young African Americans and 55% of mestizos surveyed said they were very concerned about the threat of violence committed by white extremists, compared to one-third of whites and 41% of Asian Americans. Well, I see no problem at all with that. The threat of violence by people inspired by foreign extremists invokes fear in a majority of young Americans across racial groups. But for young people of color, particularly African Americans, that fear is matched or surpassed by worries about violence from white supremacists. Well, they should, because you never know when one of those white guys are going to go off the rails. A new general forward poll of Americans age 18 to 30 shows widespread anxiety among young people about attacks from both inside and outside the United States. Well, like I say, it's better to be feared, I mean, than not concerned with at all. I mean, the Klan has been going on for so long, nobody giving a shit. They didn't scare anybody, so I guess things are looking up for the Klan. Now a bunch of people are scared of them. There you go. Well, you know me. I go after everybody. I don't care who they are. David K. Johnson is the author of The Making of Donald Trump, a new book from Melville House Publishers. While the book deals mainly with Trump's business career, it tackles the GOP candidate's professed Christianity at several key points in his personal and professional life before concluding, Trump's own words are aggressively antithetical to the teachings of the New Testament. Well, that goes for most so-called Christians. What's new? Trump's statements about religion say about the candidate, the following has been edited for brevity and clarity. I met Donald Trump within days of arriving in Atlantic City, where Trump owned several properties. To cover the casino industry in 1988, in our very first encounter, I sized him up as a P.T. Barnum. His competitor, well, don't knock P.T. Barnum, he made a fortune. His competitors and even his own people started telling me, Donald doesn't know anything about the casino business. He doesn't know the games, the odds, the customer relations. He doesn't know anything. In an interview with Donald, I asked questions that he had tried to bull his way out of, and I did something investigative reporters sometimes do. I deliberately said something that was false. Donald, like a television psychic, immediately incorporated my false statement into his answer, and that told me this guy's essentially at heart a con artist who tells you what you want to hear. It's unbelievable. I can't quit laughing. My concern is that ministers who say Donald is a good Christian, and he just met with 300 or 400 evangelical Christians this week too, those drawn to him because he says he's a Christian don't know what he says in books or profanity-laced speeches. He has beguiled them. I have mailed several pastors offering them copies of my book and to talk to them about this, and they have had no takers. So my concern is that some of these pastors have an agenda that is more political than religious, and that may have interfered with their good judgment here. The con is conning the cons, and the cons are conning back. I have also had people express the view that even Donald is aggressively antithetical to the most basic teachings of Jesus. Why do you think a billionaire would be interested in the basic teachings of the man who never existed? Then his stance on abortion, he now says he opposes it, outweighs everything else. I want to point out that Donald Trump has flip-flopped on abortion quite recently, like everybody else. He's telling Christians what he thinks they want to hear. Well, of course, that's what politicians do. Donald Trump has tapped into the economic terror, and I do mean terror, that the bottom half of all Americans are living in, and fear the bottom 90% are living in. These people are looking for an explanation. Why am I working harder and making less? Easy, stupid. Donald Trump, the banks took all your money. Donald Trump, like all demagogues, provides an easy-to-understand rationale. It's the Muslims. It's the other. Well, he's half right. Need to outlaw the Muslims. Need to do it right now. His answer is also more tax cuts for the rich. Did you hear that, working-class whites? I heard that too. More tax cuts for the rich. And a bigger military-industrial budget. It don't sound very populist to me. And this governor of Indiana, Mike Pence, he's a system man. I mean, he couldn't have chosen a more system man if he'd have actually tried real hard. Yeah, he's a TPP guy. He's all that shit. And now he's endorsed that other jerk that they're having a vote up there today, I think it is, in Minnesota or Wisconsin. Many of his proposals are heavily oriented to the rich. Oh, he's a billionaire. Why would he want to help the rich? Our television media has created a culture in which we judge people on the presumed content of their wallets. Well, it's always been that way. But having money does not make us a better person. No shit. But we worship wealth. We sure do. Even poor white people worship wealth. It is antithetical to Christianity, but it is becoming part of the dominant culture. Christianity? Christianity is a $600 or $700 billion business a year in this country. And everybody wants to start a church and get out of paying taxes. You know, Lenin, they're always jumping on Lenin, the so-called communist, which he was not a communist. He was a national economic policy man. And he said to the churches, I'm not going to interfere with your churchianity, but we're not going to support it with money. That was the job for a long time of countries, and even in Hitler's Germany, of the state financing the churches. Lenin didn't say, I'm going to do away with the churches. He said, you're just going to have to pay for your own church. We're not going to pay for you. Seemed like a good idea to me. So people are not listening to what Donald Trump is actually proposing. Once again, just as Donald Trump has beguiled some pastors with flattery, he has deceived many of his supporters with a false message. I think he's working for the devil. He's with the Satan boy. Yeah. He may end up burning in hell. He ain't going to get 29 virgins either. The people are so easily fooled by anybody comes along, even the Dukester, even Plastic Man. He's coming back again, and he's got more votes from the blacks than Donald does. Conning people is easy. People are conned all the time, perfectly conned. And the only thing you can do is sit back and have a drink and laugh about it until something serious comes along, like a civil war. Yeah. This is Terrible Tommy, and this is the end of my Wotan's Day talk. And Wotan's Day is David Lane's favorite day. Represents him completely, and we won't forget David Lane, will we? Okay, murdered by the system within 100 miles of where I'm at right now. 14-5.
If you'll gather around me, children, a story I will tell about pretty boy Floyd, an outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee, a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in his wagon, as into town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him in a manner rather rude. Vulgar words of anger, and his wife she overheard. Pretty boy grabbed a log chain and the deputy grabbed his gun. In the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. Then he took to the trees and timber to live a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was added to his name. But a many a starving farmer, the same old story told, how the outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little homes. Others tell you about a stranger that come to beg a meal. Underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City, it was on a Christmas day. There was a whole carload of groceries come with a note to say, well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you say that I'm a thief. Here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Yes, as through this world I've wandered, I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six-gun and some with a fountain pen. And as through your life you travel, yes, as through your life you roam, you won't never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.